The unsurpassed, profound, and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain it. May I unfold the meaning of the Tathagata's truth.
Good morning. Thank you for the tea. I don't suppose anyone brought a copy of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind with them today. No. Well, I'd like to try to begin with something from memory about the very beginning of Beginner's Mind. Suzuki Roshi makes a statement something like, you know, you may study a lot of Zen, read a lot of books and study sutras, and you may learn some, but you are liable to lose the limitless meaning of original mind. So that last part I'm sure of, how he actually introduced that statement of losing the limitless meaning of original mind, I'm a little ambiguous from memory. I think it's something like studying a lot of Zen. So, and that's the whole tenor of that opening section called Beginner's Mind. Is he starts off by saying, but he talks about, suppose you recite the Prajnaparamita Sutra once. It may be a good recitation. What would happen though if you chant it 4 or 5 or 100 times? You might easily lose the original feeling you had for it. And so he's saying the same thing. You know, if you practice and you take classes and you sit a lot of sashins, you're liable to develop a whole lot of mental constructs that are associated with Zen. And those mental constructs might obscure the limitless meaning of original mind. And I want to try to speak on that today. I once heard, I don't know, the author of a book about Buddhism in America, well, maybe it was Rick Fields, I'm not sure it was Rick Fields though, made a statement that it was, that Suzuki Roshi emphasized in Beginner's Mind was a cross-cultural Aikido move to trick. The context made it sound to me like to kind of trick young Americans into practicing by praising their beginner's mind, which I don't think is quite right. I think Suzuki Roshi was very sincere when he said that keeping your beginner's mind is the secret of Zen practice. But what does that mean? What does that mean? And this mind, original mind, that's the phrase he uses in that section. Lose the limitless meaning of original mind. So he's equating beginner's mind with something very, very pivotal and central in Buddha Dharma, which is original mind. So he's equating beginner's mind with the original mind. And that's a very important point. So what is he talking about? When I first started practicing Zen, I was in Tassajara, and I feel kind of blessed that my first 5 months of formal practice occurred in that little valley. It's made a strong impression on my experience of practice and hence the ideation which developed around that experience. And, you know, I would practice sincerely, dwelling in the present moment, trying to let go of thought, let go of the monkey mind. And prepping lettuce, the lettuce was so unspeakably beautiful. And the light playing on the creek, you know, and the sound of the birds. And work meeting back then was held not up in the dusty bus stop area of Tatsuhara, but down on the lawn in front of the stone office. And in the early morning, there'd be dewdrops on the grass, and there'd be green, ruby red, golden yellow jewels just scattered all over the lawn. And it's just so unspeakably beautiful. How come I had never seen that before? And I would feel a sense of joy. I would cry at times. And then somebody would come and say something. Or just come with, or their tone of voice, or their mannerisms, and it would be like somebody, it was like I'd be at Mirror Lake in Yosemite, right? And I'd be looking and I'd see Half Dome reflected Mirror Lake, and somebody comes and throws a rock in, and just, you know, all of a sudden I can't see Half Dome anymore, and that, you know, and that beautiful thing that I thought I had attained was destroyed. So I think the experiences that we have, especially starting out when through persistent, gentle effort we manage to calm the mind, we have some experience. And if we, and up to that point, if we lived our life without much profound settledness of mind, those experiences will seem unusual. Those experiences will seem profound, beautiful, and inspiring of emotion. In those experiences, we are seeing the mind, which has always been with us, and always is with us. It's something about the context of having begun practice and having that naive, open, enthusiastic engagement with practice allows us to have a glimpse of original mind in a certain hothouse kind of context. And Suzuki Roshi in another lecture says, when we have these experiences, you know, we may cry, because they seem too real to us. And our faith may grow. And we also might be a little confused and start to cry. And he says, that's okay, don't worry. It just means that your practice is not strong enough yet. So there's nothing wrong with these experiences. Often the admonition is not to attach to them. I try to soften that admonition, because in my early experience it was like almost a disparagement to talk about them and to consider them at all. And I think that misses the point. I think, you know, the experiences have some importance. Suzuki Roshi says, when you grasp it in its true sense, they have some importance. But more important is not the experience itself, he says, but the way you had the experience is important. And that same way may be the same way when you have some difficulty. So I want to tell again the story of the sixth patriarch. Sixth patriarch, according to tradition, was an illiterate kitchen monk pounding rice in the Fifth Patriarch's Temple. And Fifth Patriarch wanted to determine who would be his Dharma successor, so he had a poetry contest. And I believe it was the head monk that submitted a poem that roughly goes like, the mind is Bodhi, awakening. The mind is a mirror, actually. And the body is the mirror stand. And to brush the mirror is practice, just for clarity's sake. And that's a crude reiteration of the poem. But it's something like that. And so, this poem was presented to the fifth patriarch, the fifth ancestor, and he approved it. So it's very, very good. Post that poem for the rest of the community to see. So the poem was posted. Story has it that Huineng, the sixth patriarch-to-be, saw the poem, asked somebody to read it to him, since he couldn't read it himself, and upon hearing it said, "I would like to recite a poem myself. Would you write it down?" And so he recited, you know, basically, there is no mirror, there is no stand upon which to place a mirror. Where could dust ever alight to begin with? So that was his poem. And it was posted. And then the fifth ancestor saw the two poems, saw the new poem, tore it off and said, "What is this nonsense?" And took it off the posting. However, at midnight, he had his attendant summon Huineng to his cabin, to his room, and gave him the implements of transmission, bequeathed the robe and bowl to Huineng, said, "You know, your understanding is profound." He didn't publicly proclaim Huineng's understanding is profound. He publicly said, "This is how you should practice, you know. Polish the mirror. Don't let dust settle on it. Clarify the mind. Still the mind. Purify the mind." But he told Huineng in private, "You know, your understanding is, you get it, you know." And so, and not only do you get the understanding, but you get the robe and the bowl too. But the other monks won't understand. The other monks will probably be jealous. You should leave. And don't appear in the world as a teacher too soon." So Huineng left, and sure enough, the head monk assembled folks on horseback to go to hunt down Huineng. And they eventually found Huineng and got down off their horses, ready to do something, I don't know what. Physically grab the guy and hurt him, I don't know. But Huineng set down the robe and bowl on a stone and said, "Well, if you want them, go ahead, take them." And so the fifth patriarch, the head monk, goes to the stone and tries to lift up the robe and bowl off of the stone, and he can't. And when it's into the Excalibur, you know, King Arthur could draw the sword out of the stone. Well, the head monk couldn't lift the robe and bowl off the stone. And so Huineng says, "Do you want the robe and bowl, or do you want the Dharma?" At this point, the head monk was humbled enough to say, "Well, no, what I really want is the Dharma." So I wanted to tell that story to lead up to the punchline. And so when the head monk said that he did indeed want the Dharma and not the trappings, Huineng said to him, "Right now, without thinking good or bad, show me your original face before your parents were born." That's the punchline. Right now, without thinking good or bad, show me your original face before your parents were born. And it is said in the Platform Sutra that the head monk had a great awakening upon hearing these words.
So the original face, original mind, beginner's mind, essence of mind. These words all point to the same thing. And this mind is always with us, always has been with us. It cannot be stained. Dust cannot alight upon it. And yet, we may not feel that way a lot of the time. We may not experience our lives like that a lot of the time. Nonetheless, this is so. And practice, to a great extent, is clarifying the fact that this mind has always been with us, is here right now, can't be, and it cannot be stained. Dust can't settle on it. It's not so much a matter of changing anything. We don't have to change a thing. Everything is fine and has been fine from the beginning and will be fine at death and beyond, whatever that beyond is, I don't know. But this is what is being said. Do you remember some, maybe 20 years ago, there was these magic eye books? Remember those magic eye books? They would have, you remember? Mm-hmm. They would be, you'd open up the book and there'd be a wash of color, you know, various colors. But the instruction would be to try to focus your vision past the page of the book.
Oh, so the numbers or something.
And yeah, and numbers would appear, animals would appear. Mm-hmm. If you focused your vision, you know, a few feet or something past the pages of the book, a 3D image would emerge. And it was really fascinating because, you know, it's just one page, a one-dimensional page there. But if you changed the way in which you were looking at it, an entirely different perspective would emerge. We really don't have to change anything about the events of our lives, the contents of our lives, the people we encounter in our lives. How we hold that experience is everything. When I was in Tassajara, I would be enjoying the radiance of a calm, settled mind. Something would occur, I would get feedback from somebody, and that radiance would be smashed. And I would think I had attained something which I'd lost. But it's just refractions of mind. Just refractions of mind. Waves are the practice of water, Zen mind, beginner's mind says. There's a way to understand that the experience of I'll jump ahead to a recent experience to try to illustrate this point. I was in a zendo and waiting for service to begin. And as I'm waiting for service to begin, in walks the Doshi of the day. It wasn't the person that I was expecting to be Doshi, it was some other person that I knew. And so immediately upon that person stepping through the door, my opinion of them flashed into my mind. And I saw it with radiant clarity. I think the surprise of expecting somebody else to come through the door, and then she came through the door, all of a sudden, we'll call her Sally, all of a sudden, my opinion of Sally, which wasn't horrendous, but it wasn't the most flattering opinion to hold of a sentient being. You know, just came into my awareness. And I saw clearer than I had ever seen before that that was a complete construct of my mind. It had nothing whatsoever to do with that person in front of me. It was my mind just creating something out of thin air. And it was wondrous. Seeing it that way was liberating. You know, I could see so clearly that there was a being, an ungraspable being beyond my thought. And my thought was just my thought. And my thought just being my thought was a manifestation of original mind. The thought just as my thought was a manifestation of the original face. And I didn't have to be caught or enslaved by the projection. The projection was seen just as projection, and it had a radiant beauty to it of a sort. The mind's doing this thing. Isn't it amazing that the mind can do this thing? Can create a whole person out of thin air that has nothing to do with anybody around. Wow, what a fascinating function. No. And this fascinating function is the source of a lot of human beauty in art, literature. It's not a bad thing. If it's disparaging and we believe it to be true out there, it messes with our lives. But this function of projection, in and of itself, in its own being, is empty, we say. That's a cliche, right? In its own being, it's not a problem. It's just one manifestation of mind. And when the noise in the... when the monkey mind is quiet, when the proliferation of thinking is stilled, and the mountain floods into awareness, that is a manifestation of the same mind. They're the same. It's one mind emerging as mountains or gossip or criticism. It's the same mind. That's the shift in perspective that I use the analogy of the magic eye books to indicate. The contents, you know, the events are the same. There's a mountain over there. There's a critical thought about Sally. It's waves of the practice of water. It is just consciousness itself manifesting in one moment as a humongous mountain, in another moment as a petty thought. It's just the poetry of consciousness dancing. And this is important. This is important because if we can glimpse this, we don't have to be burdened by the farts of our mind so much. As, oh, some gas escaped again. Okay. And we have a verse to help us with this. This mind has been with us, has always been with us. This mind is with us right now. This mind cannot go away. But we have a verse that says, all my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion born through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. Which says this mind of this karmic conditioned mind is always with us, always has been with us, always will be with us. Try to get comfortable there. So, the original face. Show me your face before your parents were born. Now, what is being said there? Show me who you are, independent of your karma. Show me who you are, independent of all the conditioning, how your parents raised you, what your first lover did to you that left a deep scar on your heart, the things that you're ashamed of, the things that you regret having done, all these things that form you as a separate, isolated individual. Show me who you are before all of that. And that before is not a temporal before. It's like right now. Show me the limitless meaning of original mind in your life, in your coming forth. And that occurs simultaneously with all the ancient twisted karma, all the non-original face stuff. There are two sides of one coin. It's a matter of shifting perspective. When believed in, these projections of mind enslave us. When seen as just a flashing forth from the same source of everything, flashing forth of original mind itself, it's just a rather a certain shape that's just coming into being and vanishing. You can't see one without the other. Maybe you can, but you can see one and the other at the same time. And my experience so far has been that when I see, like that day when Sally walked into the Zendo, when I see my projection as projection, I can start to see Sally afresh. There's a chance that I can actually see Sally beyond my projection if I see my projection. If I'm really willing to realize my projection. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who say, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm slapping a samskara on top of Sally. Then Sally might be able to step forth into my awareness, independent of that. The original Sally, before her parents were born, might be part of my life. But if I believe my projection, I have no access to Sally. If I'm afraid of my projection and run from it and deny it's there, I have no access to Sally. Because then I'm just totally isolated from my experience. But if I fully own my experience and try to see clearly exactly what's going on, then there's a chance of a life beyond. A life beyond. That's beyond thinking. Our practice is to cultivate our life beyond our thought. We sit down, we cross our legs, we rock our body right and left, we settle into a steady, mobile position. Then what do? We think, not thinking. We try to live in the space that is beyond our thought. We don't have to reject our thought. We can't reject our thought. But we can stretch our heads up, figuratively speaking, a little bit above the thought and participate in that realm as well. But we have to thoroughly own our thinking. We have to thoroughly accept our delusion from beginning this greed, hate, and delusion. We have to fully honor our karma, see it as clearly as we can, be willing to confess it, that we're not bound by it. So we don't have to change a thing. We're not here to change ourselves. Just a slight shift in perspective. And the whole scene is transformed. Without anything changing one bit. Those jewels that were scattered on the lawn at work meeting, I think they were two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen before, and they stayed two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen afterwards. However, my beginner's mind transformed that whole lawn into a bejeweled realm. Didn't change a thing. My perspective for that moment changed a bit. So I'm really grateful that there are folks in this world, you among them, who are willing to sit and see clearly the contents of the heart and mind. It can be gruesome, especially initially, before that shift in perspective is become familiar enough to access fairly readily. Because when you start to see the things that we're trying to like push to the periphery of our awareness, but oh, I can actually think that about another person? Oh, God. And then, you know, then some discouragement might arise and one might not be willing to do this work. But once that shift happens and you realize you don't have to be afraid of the contents of your mind. The practice of waves, the practice of water is waves. Waves and water are one. Seen in the light of non-judgmental awareness, it's just another jewel of mind. And then there's some ease. Bring it on. I can do it. And when I do it carefully, I have composure and freedom in this mind. In this very mind, I can be at ease. I don't have to be anybody else. I'm given the raw material to create my Buddha body with everything that happens. So I can just sit down and get to work, or stand up and get to work. It's a playground. It's a Buddha realm. The same stuff that made us cringe in horror becomes a playground of practice. So, I hope that's encouraging for this work that can be difficult, but it's not only important for ourselves so that we have more peace, but also important to our world so that we don't live out nightmares and do horrendous things to each other in our nightmares. So it's very important work. And I thank you for doing it. We have some time if there's desire for conversation.
I just want to say, when you said original, it just makes me realize that we are all set different, too. Uh-huh. Which is a nice thing, too.
Yeah.
We're all originals. Yeah. We're all originals.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we write that down? That which made us cringe in horror becomes a playground of peace,
I forget what I said, but we got it on tape.
Okay.
Yeah, you can visit the website in a little while and write it down.
Yeah.
I just love the playground of practice.
Oh, that's
just makes me feel.
Yeah. That's the feeling I had in the Zendo that day when Sally walked in. Wow, this is great. I'm seeing my projection so clearly now. Oh, this is great. Yeah. The illusion of making progress occurred to me.
And yet not to deny the constructs that led to that projection of her. Mm-hmm. There were experiences that you had. It wasn't the first time you met her.
No, not at all.
You had interactions with her that led to that construct.
Yes.
There was a lot of information on the construct. Mm-hmm. So not to deny the construct, but then to use it in a in a different kind of a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than a distance way.
Yeah.
It's a tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, not to believe in it either. Not to believe in the construct.
Well, to see it as transparent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody steals from you and steals from you, you can't walk in and say, well, that person doesn't steal. We know that person steals.
Right.
But you can't say that that person will always steal, or that that person right. stole today, or, and that's a person with a lot of dimensions. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another take I had on what you say is, you know, that person comes in and steals and steals and steals, and you can say, you might get to the point where you say, that person is a thief.
Exactly.
And then you've reduced that person to just the projection and the children that he has at home to feed, or the drug habit that he has, the monkey on his back that's screaming to be fed, is not part of the picture, because this simplistic label thief takes away the rest of the drama of his karma.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of those raindrops, and then you might have, no one might have interrupted you one day, and then the next day you're seeing it, and then it isn't quite as matching as it was the day, you know, I think repetition, and then you think, oh,
yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. Sort of
thing. Yeah.
Then, mm-hmm. You go to work, kind of.
Yeah. But that joy, that wonder that occurs when the mind quiets, and that kind of experience happens. There's an essential bit of information there that should not be overlooked, you know. But it's the essential bit of information is not in the experience itself, or the joy or the bliss itself. It's the original mind that underlies it, that is present in all states of mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's. So that's, you know, Suzuki Roshi says that the experience is not valuable. Is valuable. Is not valuable. And then he says, is valuable, valuable when you catch it in its true sense. And then he goes on to say that what's important is not the experience itself, but the way you had the experience. The quality, which I take to mean the quality of effort that allowed it to come forth. And that same quality of effort might be the same when you have some difficulty. And this is a lecture, the whole lecture is a commentary on Dogen's phrase, think not thinking. And he says, usually we think thinking. And think thinking is actually think stopping. Because, you know, thinking stops our living function. And then he ends up by saying, think not thinking means think something actual, something real. Could be the sound of that crow. Or it could be a vivid awareness of a projection of mind. That could be something actual, something real. When you're not subsumed by the narrative content of the projection, but see it as projection, then that's real. So it's a really good lecture, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Speaking of confession, I want to confess that I'm not remembering your name.
Elizabeth.
Or your name.
This is the friend.
Sandy. Have you been here before? I just didn't register.
I have. I gave you a collage. Did you give me a collage? A collage, I believe.
That painting?
A painting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Linda. Melinda. I said I had to leave, and so that was...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yes.
That was long.
It's on the wall of my office.
It's actually collage
yes.
paper. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway. And I haven't been back since because... once you weren't there, and then, and so this is my first time back.
Well, thank you so much. People actually, is it of me?
Yes.
Yes, it's recognizable. Other people say, hey, that's you, isn't it?
Oh, really? Yeah. And the light was, you know?
Yeah, I do. I cherish that picture.
Thank you.
And it's been commonplace in my office at work. I felt it was clearly me to my eye and other people's eyes too. So I felt a little shy putting a Buddha image of me on the wall of my office. But it was such a lovely work that I had to.
Oh, thank you.
And Sandy, this is your first time here?
Yes, this is my first time here. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been in this building.
You live in Marin County, and do you practice? I had forgotten. Do you practice in San Rafael? Or
yes.
Sandy?
Oh, then I'll find my way to that place.
Yeah. St. Paul's Episcopal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. On certain days?
Yes, Thursday mornings. Thursday mornings at 7 a.m.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite excellent.
Yeah.
Because Thursday mornings early, I used to go into the city to walk the labyrinth way and all that, but I can't go in there anymore. So St. Paul sounds just right.
Mm-hmm. Do they have a labyrinth at that church anywhere?
They have one at Grace Cathedral.
Yeah, I know.
And at St. Paul's?
At St. Paul's, yeah. Some small churches have small labyrinths elsewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they do that.
Well, welcome, Sandy.
I think this is the beginning original line is so peaceful. It takes away all the layers, all the chatter, all the talk, and just comes to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's a sense of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all that other stuff I don't have to think about. And to see a human being that you may have known a long time with that new magic eye of their original self, it gives a new chance to reacquaint or acquaint. That, because we put all these layers and stuff away. This is a cleansing to this original eye.
Yes. And the leverage, the attraction comes from seeing clearly our projections or our karma. You know, like, you know, I've known Patty for a number of years now. And when I see Patty, I think I know Patty. And to feel the texture of that knowing and yearn to see more than that. And knowing, having faith that, you know, nobody could ever be subsumed to my projection of them or my karmic formation of them.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's always more going on there, but I can use that very karmic formation as the diving board to see, to be open to see more, have a posture that's ready to receive more. It takes diligence, it takes the tenacity and resiliency of spirit to be willing to see clearly our projections, which sometimes we aren't very proud of. Probably enough for now. So, for the last time ever, the universal dedication on page 8.
Wisdom,